Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Joanna Grabchak, good afternoon, Joanna.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. Well, more importantly, how are you? I'm so sorry that this happened to you, Joanna. What a horrific attack. Can you bring us back? It happened in December 2020, in the middle of COVID, as it happened. And you were in your work. What happened?
I was, yeah. You know, today started as any other day, really. So yeah. I was actually a student of social care and I was working at the same time, okay. You know, kind of getting my PWOB in there as well. And I was working in a takeaway in Tala and it was any other day. We got up with my partner. I had a routine check, went home, chilled for a couple of hours and off I went to my shift at around 4:30.
Yeah,
and at around 8 p.m. I actually had two girls on trainee with me. And yeah, at around halfway through my shift, 8 o'clock, just after 8 o'clock, a woman came in. She grabbed one of the menus. Obviously, she had her hood up and a mask, which was obviously understandable considering it was COVID and in the middle of winter, you know, it's normal, you know. She grabbed the menu. She left the shop. She did come back sometime after, maybe a couple of minutes after. And when she came in, she went through where the customers kind of can sit and eat their food. And she went through past the counter inside where the staff is only allowed to kind of go in. And she threw a cup at me. Which I now know was acid. At the time, I didn't know was acid. But now I do know.
It was sulfuric acid.
It was, yeah.
Okay. And when she, when you say she, this was completely unprovoked. Did you?
It was. Yeah.
Did you know? As she threw the cup, did you know that there was a liquid in the cup?
I knew there was liquid in the cup, but it didn't seem kind of out of the ordinary. You know, everyone goes around with a bottle of water or whatever, kind of coffee and stuff like this.
So it could have been water or tea or cold coffee or whatever.
Yeah, it could have been whatever.
But little did you know what was about to unfold. Okay, where do people even get sulfuric acid? I thought it was a controlled chemical, but anyway, so it hit your face.
It did hit the left side of my face. You know, as the hairline goes along, it hit there, which is I'm trying to get a hair transplant, obviously. I'm sure a lot of people know by now. The left side of my face, my left eye, which kind of shut instantly, my chest, my full left arm, the left side of my rib and the left side of my abdomen. The right side was a little bit, you know, it was just kind of splattered. It was like minor injuries compared to the other injuries.
And I take it back. I know it is 5 years ago, but you just finished your leaving cert. You started the job after, which was great. And you're doing your social care course and your part-time work to try and get some money. When did you realise that this was not an ordinary, insofar as that means, an ordinary liquid like tea or coffee? When did you realise there was something different?
Just a couple of minutes after. You know, the guards initially were the ones that told me, of course, what was the substance. But initially when she hit me, I honestly thought it was boiling water for some reason. My skin did feel like it was too small for me. Like there was maybe instinct that knew it wasn't just boiling water. But I was trying to tell myself maybe that was just boiling water. I don't know. But instinctively I knew it was something bigger, you know, with the pain. Like obviously I had a burn. I was working in a restaurant. So, you know, you do get the odd burn here and there working, you know. Even in your own kitchen, you can get one of those. But but there was something different about this one. Like my clothes were starting to melt into my skin and just the pain, yeah.
So there's panic, I presume.
There was panic and chaos there, yeah. So when it all happened, I actually took off my top. For the first few seconds, it was a total blackout. It was like I was there, but I wasn't at the same time.
Okay.
Then my own scream kind of sobered me up and the panic and the chaos that was there. when I took off my top, my colleague grabbed me under the sink and started pouring cold water all over me,
okay.
which I am forever grateful, because if he hadn't yeah. have done that, I'm sure the injuries would be a lot more severe than they are today.
And, you
and
said
the scarring would be bigger.
And the clothes yeah. were beginning to melt, beginning to stick to you. And you felt,
yes.
did you say earlier, I felt like my skin was too small for my body. What do you mean?
It's hard to explain. It was very stiff and it was kind of like pushing me down. It's very hard to explain. It felt like my skin was honestly too small for me, and
yeah.
just the pain of it. And it was like, yeah, some parts of me started to swell up as well, but it was, yeah.
Okay, so obviously someone quickly rang an ambulance.
Yes.
But you're quite close to Tala Hospital.
Yeah, yeah. Someone called in that one of the staff that was there, she started calling A&E. But while my colleague was pouring water at me, someone did say that we are close to Tala A&E, let's drop her in there. It's going to be quicker.
Yeah.
So his brother actually was the one that was driving in the car that was off. Panic and chaos, and he was trying to make sure I was okay under
yeah.
the circumstances, kind of thing. And while this was all happening, I started to call my partner, who's still with me, of course. We
mm-hmm.
are still together.
Great.
And I just told him what happened, and I was just like, someone came into the shop and they're after throwing something at me, I'm going to the hospital. And with COVID being, I can't say enough, like Tala A&E let him in at the time. They obviously put on the mask and the PPE
okay.
and everything due to COVID, but they did let him in, which I am
but when
very
you're,
grateful
but
for.
Joanna, when you're talking to your partner from the car and the Good Samaritans trying to get you to Tala as quickly as possible, did he say, what did they throw at you? What did everyone presume it was boiling water at that stage?
There was no assumptions, like nobody actually mentioned at the time
okay.
what kind of it was. It was just more kind of panic and chaos and just kind of let's get her in the hospital, like what happened, what's going on, and that kind of way, more than anything. Yeah, so it wasn't really...
So yeah. you arrived in Tala A&E. Now, it cannot be often that anyone arrives in an Irish A&E with sulfuric acid having been thrown into their face. So you go into A&E and the nurse start taking your details.
Yeah, so the nurse wanted to take my details, but she looked up from her desk and she just kind of understood the severity of it, because obviously I was at this point, I was with my bra, which was also kind of damaged due to the mm-hmm. sulfuric acid, which then she called other nurses and doctors who ran from triage and kind of took me instantly without
brilliant.
Any kind of getting to your name or anything
brilliant,
like this,
brilliant.
Which I am grateful for again. They started cutting off my clothes because they didn't know to what extent part of my jeans were
mm-hmm.
also it was like a hole in my jeans. So they weren't sure if it also went down my legs and stuff like this. So they automatically took all my clothes off.
Brilliant.
Then a decision was made on the same night to transfer me to St. James's Hospital, which again, the staff, absolutely amazing.
Okay. And St. James's Hospital, as most Irish people know,
yeah.
is the national burns unit. So you were transferred from Tala, who were brilliant and realised near the city centre to the burns unit. How long were you in the burns unit for, Joanna?
So I was actually in the burns unit as an inpatient, but being their inpatient, I was also an outpatient of the I&E Royal Victoria Hospital due to my eye.
Yeah.
Because the next morning, the St. James has brought me downstairs to one of their eye doctors, but they said, let's kind of bring her into I&E. So I was an inpatient of St. James's Hospital for a month. I am still receiving care from
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
And I am still an outpatient of the Iron Air Royal Victorian Hospital.
So
even though, despite yeah. me being kind of a month there, I'm still 5 years down the line. I'm still their outpatient.
Shocking. Shocking. And, okay, you've been now transferred to the National Burns Unit that night.
Yeah.
And what the pain level, Joanna?
The pain level was horrific. Now, when I say this, of course, I was on morphine at the time because the doctors administered it. And yeah, but you know, when you kind of wake up in the morning and the drugs and everything is kind of worn off, you kind of feel it the most. And that was horrible. It was, the skin, it was stinging. It was, it had very different kind of feelings in different areas. Like some areas I would feel like a stabbing kind of pain, others areas it would be like stinging pain. So it's difficult to kind of explain exactly what the pain was, because throughout this whole thing, the pain was different. Like after they skin grafted me and it was time to take off like bandages and stuff like this, that pain again was different because it was like metal kind of stitches in some parts of my body. So they obviously had to take them out, and they don't put you to sleep for this. I don't think they can, or I'm not too sure. Like I'm not a medical specialist myself, but they were taking them off and they were... You know, it was very painful. It was, I thought all that pain was after me, but it was.
So changing the dressings was painful. And do you mind, you said your hair was damaged. Did they have to remove some of your hair?
So basically when the acid was thrown at me and I was an inpatient of St. James's, they decided for skin grafts. And when they decided for skin grafts, in order for them to kind of be able to like clean the wounds and everything like this, they had to, my hair is very long, always has been.
Okay.
So they wanted to kind of get rid of like even the healthy parts of the hair, like shave them off just... Mm-hmm. to kind of be able to take care of that other wound. Obviously, the longer hair you have, the more kind of it can go into the wound and cause infections and stuff, which obviously they didn't want. That was, I think, one of the hardest parts in the hospital. There was, like, my first day or the second day, they actually allowed me to have a bath. And the nurse was sitting with me actually in the bathroom while I was taking a bath, which was very out of the norm for me, you know, when I kind of have a bath, so I kind of go by myself.
Yeah.
And I just felt that kind of loss of independence for a while I was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. The staff were amazing, but they were doing everything for me. Like they were going in the toilets with me, they were changing my beddings. I never was and never will be to this kind of use. Like I wasn't used to this kind of treatment. People kind of doing every single little thing for me. So it was like, even though I appreciate it so much, it was hard, you know, because I was out there and I was a student and I was out with the people. I was an outgoing person, and now I'm just kind of there in the hospital and everyone's doing everything for me. And despite me understanding like what happened and everything, it was just, it was hard, you know.
And your eye, you're now also going to the Eye and Ear Hospital in Adelaide Road. What was the diagnosis of the situation of your eye, Joanna?
There's a scar on my cornea, so it does affect my vision now. I'm not blind or anything like this, but there's like long distance. It's like blurred. Mm-hmm. Like I can see, but it's very blurred and it's.
So what about you're doing a social care course. How soon, insofar as this question can never, ever be answered, how soon were you able to go back studying?
So this was all during COVID.
Yeah,
so actually all colleges were online.
Oh,
everything was online. So I was very lucky in that sense that this was online and I could continue my studies. I was like, the support from the college was absolutely incredible. Like we were all on camera. They didn't expect this from me. They didn't expect me to be unmuted and kind of speak and or anything like this. They just kind of emailed me privately, even if I wanted any help with the assignments or anything like this. They were sending me like any like notes or anything like this. Like they knew I was an inpatient in the hospital, so they knew that doctors are coming in and out. So anytime I missed any kind of class, everything would be sent to my email and I could kind of catch up in my own time.
Okay.
But you know, I did get great support.
But you know, when we all did it during COVID, various meetings and seminars and all the stuff we did on Zoom or Skype or whatever, were they okay, or were you okay with the camera. You know, they would say, turn on your, turn on your camera. You haven't turned on your camera.
No, yeah. No, honestly. Like, Joe, even if you would have contacted me, like, 2 years ago, I wouldn't be able to do this, you know? Like, today, it's a lot easier after therapy and after so many years. I'm not going to say, like, it's amazing, because it's not.
Yeah,
like,
of course it's not.
One day it's easier, the other day it's not. Like, even going on here talking to you, I just want to put it out there that, like, honestly, like, girls and boys and everyone that's thinking out there, like, oh, that went through anything like I did, or, like, really, like, that are so self-conscious with the world of influencers and everything being so perfect, it's not. It's honestly not. I can guarantee you. So if I can go out there and just after 4 years, I know it took me time, but if I can go out there and if I can do it and if I'm okay-ish, someone else will be too. Like, just honestly take it each day as you can, even though it will be hard.
But you must have been, the mental impact. Were you scared to go outdoors for...
I was, yeah. You know, I left the hostel after a month, and despite me being so happy that I'm finally going home and to my partner and everything, and I'll be back there with him, it was hard, you know, because initially when all this happened, I didn't want to be with my partner because I was like, this is too much of a burden to him, you know, like, we're both in our early 20s. I was only 20 years old when this happened. My partner, he's 29 now, so 5 years ago, he was 24. Okay. So, you know, it's like,
young,
I didn't want to be a burden on him, you know, but obviously we did work through this and we are still together and everything is working great between us. But, you know, it was hard. And then when it was time to go to the shop or whatever, I didn't want to go out there, Joe. Like, I was covered in dressings for 4 months after leaving the hospital. I was working with the health centre up in Talad. Nurses were coming out to me, or I'd have to go into them to change dressings and get more bandages and more plasters and more this and more that. Like, this was all so exposed. I didn't want to kind of go out there and to the shops. Like, it was the worst thing ever, having to leave my home. Yeah. And I'd never for a couple of years leave my home without my partner. I couldn't just go out there on my own.
And how are you now, Joanna?
Joe, I like, you know, I'm okay-ish, like, you know, I try to understand her side of things. You know, obviously we know she has schizophrenia and stuff like this, but
she's in the central mental hospital in Port Rann. She was found guilty by reason of insanity.
She was found not guilty by reason,
or not guilty by reason of insanity, but then that's why she's in Port Rann.
Yeah. So, you know, some days I try to understand her and be like, she's sick, you know, like, I went through my thing, but she had her own illness. But it's not that easy. It's not all black and white, you know. It really isn't.
And did anyone ever say, Joanna, where she got the sulfuric acid?
I don't think so. But I know it's easily accessible because I've done my own kind of research. You know, when you kind of, your sink is clogged? It's one of those things. So it's one of those things.
Well, someone said it's used in car batteries.
I've heard it is,
Okay, and Joanna, now what's in front of you now in terms of treatments? 5 years later, you know, my God.
Yeah, 5 years later. Honestly, the time goes by so fast. Like, when I look back at myself back, like, 6 months after the attack, I'm so shocked, like, where I was 6 months after the attack and where I am today. Like, honestly, I am grateful that I am such a strong person because despite it happening to me, I was strong in all this, you know, and despite me not wanting to go out there and stuff like this, I am proud of myself today for getting my story out there, because I do want to raise awareness for people that are self-conscious for various different things, you know, and it's not only acid survivors or whatever, but it's the world is creating itself to be so perfect with the world of influencers and everything, you know, it's not like that always.
Brilliant point. And I'm thinking of people who are maybe in accidents or have medical conditions or whatever. And you're saying to them, please do not. This is not what you are. This is not what you are because of it. In your case, an attack. Did they catch the woman fairly quickly?
You know, it wasn't that they caught her. She came to them, obviously, when all this happened. Okay. The Gardaí have arrived and they put a crime scene around the restaurant. And she actually came back to them while they were still doing whatever they were doing. Right. And she came back to them with her phone. And she wrote on the Google Translate that, "I done this." And they were like, "What did you do?" And she said, "I hurt this girl." So she was the one that kind of came to them rather than they having to come to her.
Yeah. But I've no doubt, knowing the Gardaí, that they would have caught her quick enough anyway. But anyway,
they would, yeah. They were doing great work.
Taking it very, very seriously. So you've to have more procedures done and hair transplant and...
I'm hoping to have a hair transplant, I set up a GoFundMe, which I honestly didn't expect to be such a big thing. Like, honestly, when I was posting it, I expected it just a couple of friends and family kind of thing, you know. Obviously, I did post it to two Facebook groups, one of them being Maz on a Rant, which gave me a big kind of attention to this, which I honestly didn't expect. Like, it's like, I'm shocked as soon, like, the newspapers getting in touch with me and yourself, like, wow, honest to God, like, it was, like, this wasn't my intent to make it this big. Like,
no, but it's just, people want to, when people read about it, Joanna, when they hear you, they know they can see the awful, and imagine even in this case here, the awful impact it would have on you. And they do want to empathise. The GoFundMe page is called GoFundMe.com, obviously. Help me heal after the acid attack. That's the first five or six words, isn't it?
Am I right?
Okay, and where do you go for a hair? It can be done here, I presume, a hair transplant.
It would be done in Ireland. I got recommendation from one of my team up in St. James's, so I will be doing it in Ireland, in Dublin, actually, yeah.
And you completed
it? I have a consultation coming up soon, which I'm very happy for, hopefully.
You got to social care level 6.
You know,
6,
I'm still out. Yeah, I did, yeah.
And you're still attending James's, you're still attending the Eye and Ear. You have another session in September.
Yes, I do.
Okay. I think that point you make, Joanna, about the world we live in and the media and television, and we all contribute to this perfect person, this perfect Maria face or whatever, and you're saying, please, for other people who are in a position, you are more than that. This is not what you are. So it's a powerful, powerful message. You have a little boy.
I do, yeah.
Okay.
And, I do indeed.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. He's thriving.
Of course he is, and he keeps you busy, I'd say.
He's
your beautiful, beautiful boy, and as you mentioned, your great partner as well. So yeah, Joanna, I finish again by saying I'm so sorry this happened to you. I really am.
Thank you so much, sir.
And the message you come across, that comes across, is so powerful in terms of the society in the world. And there are photographs yesterday, I think the Sunday in the Man, indeed, the great Sunday World, both had photographs. If there, it was very brave of you, but you are well on the mend. The GoFundMe page is called Help Me Heal After an Acid Attack. It's straightforward. Joanna's name is Joanna Grabjack. And Joanna, I cannot wish you, find a word to wish you any more comfort and joy in the future ahead, and good health to you and your wonderful family and your great colleagues in that restaurant that night, and the great Good Samaritans that drove you to the hospital, and the great hospital staff in St. James's and Talla and the Eye and Ear. We're so proud of them. And I think your family and a lot of people beyond that would be so proud of you, Joanna, and the message that you're trying to get across. So I wish you a full, speedy and as easy as possible a recovery. Thanks, Joanna.
Thank you so much, Joe. Thank you so much for the call. Take care. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mentioning the Gardaí and Tala there and how they... Thankfully, the woman who committed this awful crime, she handed herself in a few minutes later. But I've no doubt the Gardaí would have caught her fairly quickly, because I was watching this new series that's on Prime on that platform. It was only was released yesterday, and it's called The Man in the Mask. And it's about the murder of the beautiful young woman, Elaine O'Hara, by Graham Dwyer. And... what come, and I know the Gardaí from time to time get criticism, and sometimes it's justified, a lot of the time it's not justified. But if you have ever any doubts about the ability of our Garda force, if you really have, watch this. The Gardaí involved, and as I was watching it, I was, my jaw was dropping at the skill, the intelligence, the detective work, the forensic work that was going on from the get-go. Because remember, Elaine disappeared off the face of the earth in August 2012. And she disappeared, and it was only, I think the first guard that two lads, locals in Blessington, sitting at a bridge into the Vartry Reservoir, noticed a few things glittering. One of them had a bit of a strap in the back of his car, pulled out a number of items, went to Blessington Garda Station. And Blessington Garda Station, that was a small station. And it was Garda James O'Donoghue. Now, I hope I get these names, because I'm writing them down as I was going along through the piece. He then went straight back out, and he waded in his uniform. No boots or what. He waded into the spot, and he dug down with his bare hands, and he found a Dunn Stores loyalty card near where these awful items of bondage and that carry on were found. And he got the Dunn Stores credit loyalty card, and he found out who the actual who it belonged to. And that was the beginning of the investigation. That's when people realised Elaine O'Hara, who was missing, was murdered. And then a dog walker found the remains of Elaine. But there was Geraldine Noon was a psychologist in the guards, incredible. Peter Woods, another guard, unstoppable. Around Earl O'Donnell, by the way, is in it, as is Paul Williams, who wrote the book. Kevin Duggan is another guard. Dermot O'Sullivan, Kevin Dolan, Sarah Sked, who's a guard and who did all the forensics in terms of the telephone calls. And then I'm thinking, of course, they were brilliant. They were brilliant. Let you ever doubt the brilliance of our Garda, Shia Conner, because it came across so well. They were compassionate, they were thorough, and they were incredibly smart. And of course, we extend again our sympathies to Frank O'Hara and his beautiful, beautiful daughter, who only wanted to do good in the world, and what they went through. But it's a series and a testament. I know it's a dark, dark event, but it's a testament to the brilliance of our country and the people we depend on. When we're having our worst day, they've got to be having their best day. The Gardaí, the fire brigade, the ambulance people, the retained firefighters. And when we're having our worst day, and our medics, they've got to be having their best day. And it's just an incredible testament to that. Claire Kelly. Claire, good afternoon. How long have these bees been living in your house?
Hi, Joe. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. These bees, I would say, Joe, have been there as far as I'm aware, 3 years, but they could have been there longer. Okay. I became aware of them when I noticed, especially in the summertime, this time of the year, when they're most active, there would be a lot of bees flying around the house in every room. In the morning, when I come downstairs, there are dead bees or dying bees on the floor.
Oh, so gosh.
I have to sweep them up, over them up. But I have had a beekeeper come on three occasions in the last couple of years. He told me he could solve the problem. He hasn't. There was a fee each time, of course, mm-hmm. which I didn't mind paying, because I hoped the problem would be resolved. But the bees are still there in the chimney. And now I have found them in another area at the front of the house under the gutters. So I have, they're in two areas now. So,
Are you allowed to smoke them out?
I don't know, Joe.
Or are they protected?
They are a protected species, I know that. Yeah. And I know at this time of the year they're at the most active. They're making their honey and doing whatever they do. I thought this man would come in a bee suit and smoke them out or be able to remove them safely, which is what I would hope for. I didn't want him to use a chemical spray on them and kill them, which he did, because I had to then hoover up all the dead bees after he'd gone. And,
do you think they're in the chimney or in the attic?
Oh, yes. They're in the chimney, Joe. They can be seen. When I go up into the attic, there is a crack in the wall or a gap in the wall. And he actually asked me to come up and he showed me. He said, can you see in there?
Yeah.
And he could see them inside. I couldn't see them because it was too close to the opening of the attic. I was afraid I'd fall downstairs. So I couldn't really see them, but he saw them. And he said he could see the honeycomb. And I've actually seen parts of the honeycomb fall down by the side of my cooker. I've got a Stanley oil cooker with two little covers either side. And I've seen bits of the honeycomb fall down there later on in the year, you know, when they're not busy. Bits of the honeycomb have fallen down. But when I go up into the attic now, Joe, if I were to go up today, I would have to have the hoover ready, because when I open the attic door, an avalanche of dead bees will just come toppling down. So I'm very keen rid of them and to have them removed safely. And I know the honeybees are on decline in Ireland. They are a protected species. I don't want to kill them. I don't want anyone to come in and kill them. I'd like them to be removed safely and properly and rehomed, you know, and somewhere in a more natural habitat.
And do they make a sound?
Oh, they do, yes.
And can you hear the sound?
I can hear it in the attic, too, a very high-pitched buzzing sound. Now, when they're in the house, of course, you know, they're just buzzing around the kitchen or buzzing around the other room.
But still.
That doesn't bother me too much, but I'd like to have them removed. You know, I don't want them in my home.
Have you been stung, Claire?
Not recently, no. I was stung in the past. But no,
and are you nervous of being stung?
I am. Yeah. I'm nervous of being stung, especially in the attic. If I had to go up into the attic for anything, and I do, I don't go up into the attic unless I really need to. I know when I do go up there.
Just
sorry.
To remind people, this is the sound. This is the sound that's in the up in that attic. Mother of God.
Yeah. Now,
Steve Gallagher says, I know it's not as intense as that all the time by any stretch. Hopefully, mother of God, you couldn't live in the house. Claire, stay there. Steve Gallagher runs swarms.ie. Steve, good afternoon.
How you keeping, Joe?
Good. Are they protected?
The honeybees aren't, but they kind of should be, like all of nature, but those particular ones aren't. There's only one type of honeybee in Ireland. There's about 104 species of bee, though, in the country. And there's three or four of them that are protected. But those ones are seriously in decline.
And do you hear of this situation often, that they're in the chimney? They've been there for nearly 3 years?
Yeah, it's pretty typical. So, like, Friday, Saturday, the weather went crazy. And, my partner, Abigail, probably would have received... On Thursday, she got 88 cases. Now, they wouldn't all be chimneys. They'd be maybe 10% chimneys. And Friday was nuts. Saturday could have been 200.
Hang on, 200 what?
200 swarms. 200 cases of bees arriving on or near property.
People contacting swarms.ie saying, a swarm has arrived, what do I do?
Exactly.
What sparked that epidemic?
It's the weather. They reproduce when the weather is good. The last couple of weeks, the weather was crap. So once the conditions are right, the bees want to take their opportunity, and then it kind of goes a bit nuts. Like, the weather was very hot. It was the hottest day of the year there, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're right. Friday.
So that's whenever the sun shines, the swarms go crazy. So there would have been a lot of people getting bees in their chimneys. You were saying there earlier on, was it legal to smoke them? That's the very first thing you do. If they're bees are in the chimney for less than 5 days and they're in the flue itself, you can safely remove them yourself with a very small, very smoky fire. But you have to be persistent. So if you like get kind of a small fire going, no coal, no plastic, nothing like that, and then heap on a load of turf or a load of kind of dry grass, the smoke Okay. They get annoyed with it, and then they just hoot out. Like, if you're really lucky, it's up and go. The problem happens, though, once they establish. Okay, I just want to use them in an analogy for, we get a lot of different types of cases. It's usually roofs. So Claire was saying she had a problem with her roof as well. So those ones are fairly successful. Chimneys are a nightmare. Like, so if you can imagine trying to bake a cake through a letterbox, that's kind of like what it's doing to get the bees out with chimney.
But why is that? Can I not just light the fire and hope they'll smoke?
Okay, so once they establish, so it takes, once the swarm comes, the queen, who lays all the eggs, right? So when she swarms, if she's laying eggs, she's too heavy to fly. So the bees starve her for a couple of days before they swarm. And then once they land, they start feeding her rapidly so she can lay eggs again. And once they lay eggs, they won't leave the eggs. So you have a window to smoke them out, usually.
And the window is the first few days.
Yes.
Because once the queen starts laying, they will all stay to protect.
Well, she can't fly anymore, so they're not going to abandon her most of the time. Sometimes it works. It's nature. They do their own thing. Like, but a lot of the times they don't go anywhere.
So what can she do, Steve?
So if the chimney was capped, the bees are at the top. And that can be doable. If the chimney's not capped, it's just an open flue. The bees can't have a tendency to be at least a metre down. So you're not even in hand reach anymore. Like, you can't even physically reach them. And you physically need to be able to pull the parts out, the comb, the honeycomb out, and then get to them. Then there's the other option of, which is extremely non-economic, is you scaffold up to the chimney, you demolish the chimney, and you take it apart brick by brick, and you take it out that way. But that's excessively expensive. So, like, chimneys are pretty much the worst case you can get. And we really try to get the bees when they're handier, which is on the ground in a bush. But once they go into the chimney, like, it's nightmare level. Like, and for the beekeeper to actually get up there safely and do it, like, it's very, very hard.
You need a fire engine or a cherry picker.
You need a cherry lift. You can't be doing this on the ladder. It's suicide. Like, so even on a good day, the bees are trying to kill you, you know, and then you're dealing with height. So the last chapter had to come and unfortunately destroy them. I can understand why. It's very dangerous. Like, and the guys that are doing this, like, there's not like a huge amount of beekeepers in the country that will will risk themselves to do it. But there's a lot of guys that will, and they really try to help. And we are very lucky that we have so many good people on our team that do this. They'll come out and they'll try and smoke for you.
Steve, excuse my stupidity. I mentioned the fire brigade. Could the fire brigade come out and hose down the chimney? Could they be hosed out of it with a high power hose?
Well, I'd say that would do more damage to the house than anything. So the best bet is to get the fire going in the first 5 days. Now, there's complications. Say the bees, if the chimney has been relined, the bees are usually behind the liner or they go into the breast and then you can't even see them. So, like, you don't know how bad a chimney is until you're already up there. And that means you're already spending a couple of $100 on a lift. And usually the lift is only there for a day. You have to make a decision.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of variables.
And if you get someone that has that, I can't hire one of those cherry pickers. You've got to have training or whatever.
There's a lot of complications to it. Like, so, sometimes the cheapest, safest way, like if like the homeowner has a member of the house that's allergic, like you can't expect them to try and light the fire the 5 day project ahead of them. Someone get killed. So sometimes you have to go, here, look, I'm really sorry, but there's only one safe solution here, and it's a horrible one. But that's what happens. So we try to prevent that. The goal is to prevent them going into the chimneys.
Is there anything Claire can do now?
Well, a beekeeper can come, but like you're looking at them trying to get something they can't reach in a lot of cases. Like, at best bet, it's 50-50. That's on a good day, that they're coming out alive.
But if I lit a fire now and kept it going with grass for five days non-stop.
Okay, so if they're established, say, 3 years, right? So you have a colony that will build half a metre in the flue a year. So you've got, a metre and a half of wax, which is basically candle, and honey, which could be flammable. So you could have 50 kilos of material in your chimney and you could set that on fire and burn down your house. So really wouldn't be recommending you lighting a fire if they're in there for years and years and years. Plus, the smoke will just go right back down into the out the fireplace.
Out the fire. So, and what about, does my house insurance cover?
No,
Does it not?
No. Nothing. Bees aren't covered under kind of anything from what I understand.
Yeah. Claire.
Yes.
How are you feeling now? God,
oh, God. I'm even more disillusioned.
I wasn't much help.
It's a bigger problem than anticipated. I have had the fire lighting before, and I had it lighting earlier this year, you know, around Christmas time. But I know they hibernate at that time of the year, so that probably didn't help much. But the beekeeper that came to me originally said he can see them. When he goes up into the attic, he can see them. There's a crack or a little gap in the wall. He can see them. So unless some of the wall could be taken out, some of the blocks could be taken out, could they be removed then, I wonder, Steve?
That would indicate to me that they're in the breast. And once you start messing around with your chimney is a very heavy structure, and the beekeeper is not in charge to be smashing out bricks and something that could fall in on the house. Like, we can only do what we can. If he says he could see them through the brick, that would tell me that's a horrible, horrible case you have. And so if the flue is still in use and you were lighting the fire and it didn't bother them, like, the smoke is just going right up the flue, they're not in the flue. So the smoke wouldn't have worked anyway. But to do that properly is very, very expensive. He probably did the best he could, thinking that he was doing you a favour by not going here. Look, you need to get a builder. You need to get £2,000 worth of scaffolding. You need this and this. Like, it gets crazy expensive to do it right and safe.
What are you thinking, Claire?
Well, will they eventually go, Steve, or are they will they be there forever? Yeah.
They do die off, but the structure that they've built in your breast or in the chimney or whatever is basically like an open vacancy on daft, and other bees have very strong sense of smell, and they will nearly always reoccupy a previous spot unless the space is taken away. So the one in your roof, okay, so that's a solvable case. I'm about to do one right now, right? So that's beside the chimney, but it's in a roof. So we take off a few tiles, we take out the stuff, and then we backfill the space so that they're very attracted to the smell that they put into the wood. So if you take away the space, you still have bees looking at it, but they'll go, oh, wait, there's nothing here. And then that's your prevention, if that makes sense. But you can't really do that in a chimney unless you were to pump the cavity. Like, it's all MacGyver stuff here. You're trying to work out problems on the fly. So for a chimney cavity, you'd almost have to fill it up with vermiculite or something like that. You have to take away the space, basically, or they come back.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Claire, avert your ears from my next question. Steve, can bees kill me?
Oh, Jesus, yes. Would they? Have they? No, I've never heard of anybody getting killed.
Okay, thanks.
But anaphylaxis is a very serious condition. Yeah, 20 minutes, one sting, and you're choking to death. So I've never heard of it happening to clients, but usually they're already knowledgeable that they have anaphylaxis sensitivity, so they have EpiPen and stuff. But yeah, absolutely. There has been beekeepers who have died in the past in Ireland from stings. So they can be, they can be dangerous.
Well, Claire, do you have to say to your friends, if you're allergic to bees, please do not come and visit me?
Oh, I do. I had a friend here the other night, and she went home with a bee in her car. She nearly crashed on the way home. She told me she couldn't get it out of the window. Because when I open the windows and doors, they still don't fly out. You know, they're in the kitchen now as I'm talking to you, buzzing around. A few of them, not many, but they're in all the rooms in the house every day, all day. They're quiet in the evening. You know, they're quiet in the evening. They're not out as much. But I have them again, as I said, out of the front of the house now, just under the gutters. So I don't know if they could be removed more easily than the ones in the chimney.
Oh, that would be your typical case. Under the gutters means that they're just going in under the slate, and they're in a cavity between the two battens where your slate sits. And then they go up or sideways, depends on what way the space is. But yeah, those ones are, because they're accessible, you just put it off slates, easy peasy.
See, let me put, given that we're so full of, you're full of facts, why can't they just leave them there?
Yeah, you can, but see, the problem that Claire is having is they multiplied. So the one in the chimney probably swarmed, they split in half, half stayed, half went looking for a new place, and they ended up in the entrance to the door. So, like, the record is 7, I think, nationally, 7 colonies in one house. That could be wrong. There could be more. That's the highest I've seen. But like, you'd be very unlucky to get up past three. And it takes a while. It takes a couple of years. But that's the major problem is they're mostly not aggressive. Sometimes they can be, depending on the weather and the conditions. But most of the time, they're fine. People live with them all the time. There's probably 10,000 people who have bees in their house in the country. But then if builders are required to come in to do something, the bees have to shift. Or if they're swarming a lot and going into other spots, then they have to shift. So a lot of variables.
Tricia Ryan, Joe at rt.ie 51551. Tricia, they just...
Hi, Joe.
Good, thanks. When did they arrive?
Last Wednesday I got home. I had my grandchildren with me and I noticed some bees inside in my kitchen.
Okay.
So I went in, swooshed them out. I had left the kids in the car and brought them in, and that was fine. Got something to eat. And my daughter came then. She came out. She came in. She said, "Mom, look above the roof." And there was, I couldn't even say how many, all around my chimney.
Thousands.
I went, "Oh my God, they're just a swarm. They'll move on." I'm in the country, you see, and I think, "Oh, they're going to move on." And next thing they'll be sent it. They were in my bedroom. They were in my kitchen. I have, sorry, Joe, I have three chimneys. Two of them are unused. You know, okay. they're just like, it's a farmhouse, we say. And I never had even thought to cap the ones you don't use. So I got a beekeeper came, local beekeeper came. He was great help. And he said, "We smoke them."
Yeah.
So the two of us, bee suits on us, started fires, and he went. So I had to get I had to do the three fires, Joe, if you understand, because as they came out of the one they were in,
into the other,
they went into the pot next to it. And then they went, so I had to put the fires out anyway because the house filled with smoke and it was a disaster. They all came into the kitchen. It was like something out of a horror movie. I had to, so they're still up there anyway. That's the story. They're still up there. They're back in. They kind of clung around the chimney pot that night. And the following day, they went back in again. I couldn't keep the fire going because it's a small fire and it was coming back into the house. So that's my story. It was
Steve,
a nightmare.
Is it too late?
So it could be that, if depends on if they're in the unused chimney. So what can happen is the bees will... They will literally act like a kind of HVAC, like an air conditioning, and they will push the smoke right back down again. And they can do that for like an hour. And what should be, this is why it takes up to 5 days. The goal is kind of to tire them out, and they just get a point where they get fed up and they go, "No," and they leave. And
now, in fairness, Steve, it did work. It did start to work. But because the fire in the bedroom upstairs is too small, the smoke started coming out of the room, you know, it did. I just couldn't maintain it for longer. I had to go in 7 hours.
That's you got really close, I think, but
they had other places to hide. Yeah, they all sat around the chimney that evening, and it was thunder and lightning. I said, "I should get rid of them now during the night," and they were still there that morning. And then they went back in again.
They don't fly at night. During the day is the essential time to keep the fire going. They don't fly at night. They won't move at night.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you had it going like on a day like today, or like a day like Friday or Saturday, and you kept that going relentlessly, you can get them out. But if you're unlucky where they've gone into the breast or they've gone in behind the liner, you're kind of screwed.
I'd never thought of ever capping the chimneys off. I never even thought of them going in there, you know, in all the years we were in the house. We never had an issue. But so when they were coming up out of the chimney they were in, they were going down the next one, and if that didn't suit, so I had to keep the three fires going, and it was impossible. You know, it was impossible to keep the three of them going. You know.
Okay.
But that's it anyway. It is a nightmare. It's horrible. Awful, and I'm just going to have to think about something else now, because...
Steve, have you any good news?
Good news, So only a small number of the cases end up in chimneys. I'd say 95% of them are ones that are between 8 and 2 foot off the ground. That's the bread and butter that the 1,100 members go out and help people with. And when they get them on the ground, it means they don't go into the roof, they don't go into the chimney. So the great news is that we've done like 250 million bees in 7 years, maybe 10 or 12,000 colonies. We put maybe €5 million worth of value into the economy in rural families. So there's great news. It's just it sucks when it goes into the chimney. It's worst case scenario stuff. But it's not as common as the other cases.
Yeah, okay. And this is your livelihood, Steve, I hope, is it? Is it your livelihood?
Sort of, yeah.
How'd you get involved?
Yeah, it is. My partner Abigail wanted to make natural skin cream, and she needed beeswax. Tried to buy it online, couldn't. Ended up becoming a beekeeper. I had worked in a call centre and ended up then quitting the call centre and saying I'd never work in a call centre again, and then somehow started one on my own phone. So now we're the national hotline for bees, 999 for bees, basically.
You make a bee, you're the bee line. You make a bee line for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Claire?
Yes, Joe. I don't know what to do now. Can I ask Steve just one question? I think it was on your website on swans.ie that can they be hoovered out? Can they be sucked out with a special kind of hoover? Or can when the beekeeper goes to collect the honey and they wear the bee suit and they use a smoke to sedate the bees, right? Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's correct.
Then if they're quieting down, can they be removed then? You know, if he was to go up into my attic now in his protective suit and use that smoke through the crack in the wall or if he was to take out one block from the wall, could he potentially remove them then if he was to use the smoke to keep them quiet? Is that possible?
Okay, so just if they, let's say they're there for 3 years and they're building half a metre in a direction we don't know. So, and it's up to anywhere from 5 to 50 kilos of stuff. One brick might not be enough to remove to get access to everything.
The problem
with cavities of bees, right, is when you, in a hive, you open up the box, they're contained in the box, so they can't go anywhere, okay? The only place they can go is up and out.
Yeah.
When you open a roof, it's nothing but holes. So if you don't open enough, what they do instinctively is try to survive and they'll move out your way. And then what you'll do is you'll get the bees that you got quickly, but it's like you're 70%, they're still in there. You close up again, they're still going. So you have to open the space to see it, to contain it, and then to remove it, if that makes sense. So, and the Hoover idea, the Hoover idea exactly the same. So if they are built, if they start their comb and it's a meter down, that's the top of it, and you start to Hoover them, you can't reach them with your hands. There's not really a tool for it. They'll just go down and they'll go out of your way. So you have to then try and chop out the wax. And gravity is your biggest enemy with this because you have a drop. It literally is a nightmare to deal with them when they're in there for a couple of years, unless that the chimney was capped. Then they're at the top, but then it's almost doable. Or you break down the chimney and then it's a fortune. So,
but when you say capped, Steve, sorry, is that just like a crow stop thing? You know, is that what you mean?
Like a solid cap where, see, they seem to go down a meter. They're avoiding the rain. But if you have a cap on it, then there's no rain. They prefer to build top down. But in chimneys, see them usually, they start about a meter down. So if there was like a chimney cowl, unless it was a solid one, they'd go down, if that makes sense, usually.
Okay, this is not a solid one. It's, you know, the ones you use for the birds, keep the birds out?
Yeah, they'll be probably a meter down. Or it sounds like they're in the wall, though. It sounds like they're in the breast.
Okay.
Yeah, I did have the chimney cleaned earlier this year, and the guy who cleaned it, when he pushed all the stuff down from the top, no bees came down.
Oh, but stuff came down.
Well, I had the chimney cleaned, but a lot of stuff came down, but no bees.
Okay, so was there like honeycomb in the debris?
There was bits of it, yes. And as
bits,
I said earlier,
it should have been a black bag word.
He took an awful lot of stuff. He took three bags full of stuff, actually. Well, Steve,
Claire,
three
bags. Claire, we obviously there's a lot more to this, unfortunately, and hopefully we'll get more calls. We'll put you when you know Steve now, and Steve knows you, and maybe the chat could continue. Steve, thanks indeed of swarms.ie, Claire Kelly and Tricia Ryan. You heard Steve, he did his best there. Sorry we couldn't be of more help. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We had it on Friday again. Three fellas on e-scooters surrounding two men and threatening them, as we heard. And then hardly a day goes by now when the malign effects of e-scooters. You're saying you used to walk to work every day in Cork, Dennis, but you've changed your habits.
Sure.
Why?
I would like to go to work earlier and be set up earlier, but it's become impossible with the number of e-scooters and bikes that are on the pedestrian path between 8:30 in the morning and about 9:10.
Whereabouts?
So now, over the two main bridges, are the last two bridges in Cork, one named for Eamon de Valera and one named for Michael Collins.
And they're just flying over back and forward.
Yes, with impunity and dangerous and at speed and weaving through pedestrians and hitting pedestrians, including myself, a number of times.
And what, they bumped off you, or they did you catch the wheel? Or?
Well, I've been caught from behind and hit in the ankle.
Yeah.
And they continue on as if nothing happened.
Yeah.
I've been hit from the back in the shoulder and again continue on without... So that's happened in the last 3 years.
And if you put your hand up to try and slow them down?
So what I have done recently is I put my arm out to try and make sure that they go around me.
Okay.
If I see one coming at me. So the last incident, which was three, was there was one e-scooter coming towards me. It was busy. It was about 9:15 and there was a pedestrian walking beside me and there would have been a space between us and the e-scooter was making a beeline for the space between us.
Right.
So I stepped to my left to make more room. And as I stepped to my left, I was hit from behind by an e-scooter, which I didn't see, obviously, and went straight into the back of me and then continued on as if nothing happened.
Any signs up to say no scooters?
No, nothing at all. There's the law apparently is there. The RSA, I even checked it before I sort of come onto your program to make sure. And the law is very clear on it. It is illegal to ride an e-scooter on a footpath.
Yeah.
It's illegal. But the worst was I came to work late one day. I took an hour off and I said, right, I walk in slowly. And it was 11 o'clock, July 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And one e-scooter was bombing at me at high speed on Eamon de Valera Bridge. And I put out my arm to make sure that he would go around me. And he actually drove straight into my arm. And then when I exclaimed an expletive, I won't say I didn't, at him for doing that. So he threw down his scooter, came back, headbutted me, and then sucker punch to the jaw as well. And I wanted to thank any of the people who stopped and bore witness to that, and a gentleman in a nearby building who videotaped it. And
gave it to the guards, I hope.
And I reported it, and I also went to emergency ward after that because I was hit in the head.
It was an assault. You were headbutted. You got a punch.
Headbutted immediately and followed directly by...
That's a savage assault.
Yes, Joe, but I want to put it in perspective. That lovely lady who was on earlier, Joanna.
Okay, you're very kind.
It pales into insignificance.
Yeah. Okay.
But I also would point out that the Gardaí can do what they can, but they are severely under-resourced, and they have no way of stopping or identifying these people.
There's no ID on the bike whatsoever.
There's no IDs on the bike. You can't stop somebody. You can't do anything as a civilian. So they go on with impunity. But on Saturday, I was approached by two people on an e-scooter going again at speed down a narrow footpath. And, I put my arms out to make sure they go around. And I actually said to them, you're not supposed to be here. Go onto the road.
Yeah.
And they just kept coming straight at me as if I wasn't even there.
Yeah.
But it's happened so many times, Joe, that I altered my time that I walked to work so that I avoid this.
Yeah, as you were saying,
that's not right as a pedestrian.
Well, what does it take? What would it take for
I like to be somebody who proposes solution.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see why the council, when they want to put in something that benefits themselves and spend taxpayer and ratepayers' money, why can't they spray paint the footpaths with no e-scooters allowed?
Yeah.
And at least then a civilian... pedestrian can point out, look at this, there's a sign on the road.
There'd be a start anyway.
But I'm fit and able. I can sustain these things. But, you know, an older person won't be able to.
As I say, not a day goes by we get calls. Not a day goes by when it doesn't arise on the programme. Dennis, safe, insofar as I can even say it to you, but I shouldn't have to. Shouldn't have to, but safe travelling. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Story of Joanna Grabjack, who's at the start of the programme, being attacked, sulfuric acid, unprovoked attack, awful injuries to her face. She's slowly recovering. It's reminded people of Alexandra Treshenko. Now, listeners to Liveline will remember it was 2011. Alexandra was on Liveline because the man who assaulted her had been sent to prison. But in the assault in her apartment in Finglas in Dublin, he cut off a number of Alexandra's fingers on her right hand. He was jailed, by the way, for 16 years. He stabbed her in the face, neck, chest and abdomen. I'm thinking of the list of injuries that Joanna went through. And we've managed to find Alexandra again, thankfully, and ask her how she's doing. Alexandra, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you?
Thank you for reaching out.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
And how's your hand?
The hand is still the same. There's no change. Yeah, but I'm using it as much as I can, you know, because this is not going to stop me.
Yeah.
You know?
And just
if you really like something, you will do it no matter what.
Okay, let's just listen back to that day in November, 2011. You had been attacked in 2009 when you were on Liveline. Alexandra, as we heard through the court case, this man James Kenny cut off a significant part of your right hand with a machete, deliberately. Are you in pain? How is your hand in terms of pain, Alexandra?
Well, it's a constant pain. It's never came out since the time I was injured. I always can feel it and I can't get away.
It's a constant pain.
It is, yeah.
As well as the mutilation. And in terms of other injuries he inflicted on you, Alexandra?
Well, both of surgeons' teams made a just brilliant job, especially for my face. Some of the scars are still visible, but it's not that awful like it was from the first time. So they did a great job.
And then he also inflicted injuries, this man, on the side of your body.
It is, yeah.
Did you know James Kenny before he burst into your apartment that night?
Not at all.
Had you ever seen him before?
No.
Horrific attack. Sorry to bring it back like that, but I didn't want to ask you about it again, Alexandra, because it's extraordinarily traumatic. Now, have you got a prosthetic on the hand?
I did, indeed, for three fingers.
Yeah.
But they're the only cosmetical ones, so there's no real use, you know. And then they were always on the way, and they because the hand is getting weaker, and they were kind of heavy, getting heavier and heavier. So I'm not using them anymore because it's just not convenient for me, you know.
Okay. Now, when you were on and people were deeply, deeply moved, one by your demeanour and your dignity, but also by the horror of what happened to you. We had a phone call from a woman called Sheila Sims. I haven't heard from Sheila since, but hopefully she's well. And Sheila suggested, and it was a pretty, pretty wild suggestion, that we hold an art auction to try and get, it was the GoFundMe of its day, I suppose, that we hold an art auction to raise money for your recovery. So we put out a call, and believe it or not, when you were there on the day, we got 206 paintings. We got a significant number of sculptors. We had it on a Sunday in Black Rock Village. It was a most remarkable day in terms of the atmosphere, in terms of your speech. It was in, I'm trying to remember the name of the auction room. Someone please help me because I want to give them a shout out. It was a converted church in beautiful Blackrock village, and they were so magnificent to us. And the art auction in itself, we had Bobby Balla donated, John Adams from Cork. There was a picture of Murphy's Brewery in Cork, and Heineken, they came in and bought that. Paddy Campbell, the sculptor, great sculptor, he donated a piece that raised over 5,500. Rasher, the great Rasher, he signed a guitar, and that went for 2,500. I gave a piece. I think I had to put money in the back of it so people would buy it, do you remember? Do you remember that day?
Oh, yes, yes. I remember like it was yesterday. And yeah. I am so grateful. Joe, all of your program, that channel, I would like to call it as a channel, mm-hmm. not just only a program, because that's how you connect in with people. Yeah. And people connect to each other. And in that program, you let them to be heard and helped. And mm-hmm. supported, and that's what I received from the auction, and from you, and from everyone
else who was involved. It
is amazing, really. It's not just community; it's the aura around the program.
And are you still? You're very kind. And Alexandra, are you still? Because this was the whole thing. You were a gifted painter when this man. Mm-hmm. inflicted these awful wounds on your hand. Are you still painting?
I do, yes. I'm more concentrated not on the paintings but on drawings. I prefer pencil drawings and more detailed things, and mostly black and white. Yes, I do.
Okay, and how has your life been in this? What's now? 15 years. 15 years. You have an 11-year-old.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
And she's finishing the fifth class and one more class, and then she's going to the bigger school.
Okay. And I know I remember a lot of people from that time. One pair, apart from your powerful words, one person I remember, am I right, was your mother-in-law, or your soon-to-be mother-in-law. She was brilliant. She was brilliant as well. It's great. And you had such an effect, in the horror that you'd gone through, you had such a positive effect. And I know it was Yvonne Noonan, wasn't it, who helped us do the auction in Blackrock Village. And it was apart from anything else, it was just a magnificent day of community and helping and everyone donating and everyone buying. And another great demonstration, if we need it, of what a great country this is. Alexandra, I'm so happy to hear from you. Best of luck in everything you do. Say hello to your 11-year-old daughter.
And
Is she going to big school next year?
In the sixth class.
Brilliant. Okay, she's going to the sixth class. Well done. Well done. A kind regards to you and your family. And it's magnificent to hear your voice. Magnificent to hear your voice. That's Alexandra Threshenko. Alexandra.